At CIVID, we are creating human-like vision for robots.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the A3 Robot Industry Podcast. I'd like to welcome the listeners from all over the world, from Kalamazoo, Michigan, Teaneck, New Jersey, and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I'm thrilled to have Henrik Olsen from CIVID. And if you don't know Henrik, or if you've not heard about CIVID, they manufacture one of the leading 3D cameras, which enables robotics to do the things that they do, from pick and plays to bin picking and machine tending, for some examples. CIVID and Henrik are located in Oslo, Norway. So let me tell you a little bit about Henrik. He's an experienced founder with a demonstrated history of working in the industrial automation industry. His leading 3D vision company, CIVID, was from its incubation at SINTEF, which is one of Scandinavia's largest independent research organizations, to a fast-growing company in the 3D robot and automation field internationally. He's seasoned and award senior researcher in machine vision, pattern recognition, 3D cameras, optics, robotics, programming, and parallel processing. He graduated from Norwegian University of Science and Technology called NTNU in engineering, cybernetics, and robotics. Thanks, Henrik, for coming on the A3 Robot Industry Podcast. This is going to be a bit different because much of what you supply is kind of on the visual side, is best shown on a webinar or YouTube or at a trade event. So I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for that nice introduction. And thank you for having me. So it's going to be great to talk about the thing I'm so passionate about, namely 3D vision. So yeah.
Before we dive into the industry and the tech, can you answer a few questions for those in the audience that may not be exclusively vision experts? And they might be headed on a walk or at the gym or whatever. So we're going to have to visualize some of the things. So my first question to you is, can you explain what a 3D camera is and why is it different from a 2D camera?
Sure. So yes, I will try to do it very visually without any vision at all here. But anyways, yeah. So think of a 2D camera. We all know that, right? So that's a flat representation of the world. So you have the X and Y data, like a plane, so to say. So that is actually it is a a projection. So you stand and take an image, and that is a projection of what you see. So in a 3D camera, we introduce the depth dimension. So if you think of it, for every pixel, you also have the depth, the data, the distance from the camera origin to the objects that you are imaging. And in that sense, you have X, Y, and Z, where the Z represents the depth. It's more of a true representation of what you actually see, because we humans, we see in three dimensions, and the 3D camera gives a picture that is represented in three dimensions.
Thank you for that. Also, I'm going to ask you to explain to the audience, because I think it's important to the podcast, who may not know, what is a point cloud?
Yeah, so that is what we call the picture, the 3D picture. So a point cloud is then points in space. So it's a digital representation. And if you think of the image we talked about earlier, for every pixel in the sensor, so to say, instead of just having the color information that you would have in a regular 2D color image, you have also X, Y, and Z coordinates. And those coordinates are the distance and positions of surface points of the objects that you are imaging. So together, all of these points represent a point cloud. And that point cloud is then, all these points are on the surfaces of all the objects that you are taking a picture of, if that was understandable.
No, that's a great explanation. Thank you. And I was also gonna ask you another kind of basic 101 3D vision question about, where is the vision algorithm created and how do we make it better?
Yeah, so that is a good question. So, of course, there are several types of algorithms, so to say. One thing that is what we do at CIVID is the vision algorithm in order to create this point cloud. So, and then you go into the measurement technology and how to do 3D imaging and so on. And that is an algorithm itself, which create a point cloud as an output. And when you have the point cloud, then it depends on what you're going to use that point cloud for. You need to make an algorithm to do that. So let's say you want to pick objects. You have a robot and you want to pick objects. And then you have a 3D camera, for instance, from Civit or some others. You take an image, you get the point cloud. And then you want to try to detect objects in the point cloud. And you can, for instance, have a CAD model of the object. And then you search in the point cloud, try to match that CAD model with the points in space there. And if you get a match, then you can tell that match to the robot and it can go in and pick it. The algorithm to do all of that is a vision algorithm. And it's kind of representing the brain of humans. You know, we see the world, our eyes see the world, and then we have the brains that tell the hand to go and pick something, tells it where it is in space and so on. So it's several algorithms, but we at Civit, we work on creating the best point clouds, and then our customers, again, they utilize that point cloud to do their so-called vertical integration, whether it's picking, assembly, dimension control, inspection, or guiding of robots or whatnot.
And so how did you get started in the 3D vision space? Like you went to school, this was part of your education, yes?
Yeah, it was. I did a robotics education, and I got pretty early. We had a project and we were seven students that went together to create a robot that was competing in this a real competition in France. And we had to make a robot that was going to do that competition, and it was bursting balloons. That was the like two robots competing. And I was me and a friend. We did a vision system and the brain. So we had to, and then I got really inspired in that field. Those early days, it was in 2000. Then after school, I chose to start working in SINTEF, where I joined the Vision group there, and we worked very closely with the robotics group in the same research institute. So I was actually part of building up a group that was particularly oriented toward robot vision. And then, we worked with all types of 3D camera systems like time of flight or laser or stereo vision, and also structured light, which is the core technology behind the Civit camera. And yeah, so it was around 15 years of research before we started Civit, me and a colleague, in 2015.
And your motivation was to make the best 3D camera available.
Yeah, so I mean, we worked, we did lots of the analysis part in regards to the vision algorithm we talked about. And then we bought 3D cameras or systems from the net, and it was always a little problematic because the quality was not as good as we wanted. Of course, there existed some really high-end systems like the metrology scanners and so on, but that's also extremely expensive and they were very slow. So mostly we chose cheaper camera systems, which is pretty normal to do in research or in universities. And then also we were inspired by the Kinect. The first Kinect came out at that time. And we saw that there was a need for a better 3D camera. And we had, during different projects, I worked for a time for ESA and NASA, creating a time of flight camera that was going to be used in space, things like that. So we had explored different technologies and followed the development for a long time. And we saw the customer need, like our industrial clients, they came to us, asked if we could do this kind of inspection or picking task or whatnot. And we tried different cameras, wasn't good enough. And eventually we started out a strategic project where we wanted to create a new camera that kind of unifying the world of the high-end metrology scanners with more of the low-end Kinect-ish type of system that was fast and affordable, so we could get high quality really fast and to an affordable price, such that it could open this field of robotics within material handling that we saw were emerging. So now we see that several companies, Civit included, is offering these solutions now, and we see there is a wave of automation happening on top of these cameras in regards to picking, placing, assembly, and yeah, all of these tasks. So that was the start.
Well, that's great to hear that history. So now in your work in the industry, do you work with integrators or with like OEM customers, or is it a mix of both?
So it's a mix. It depends. But since we only provide the point cloud, so to say, the image, then our customers, mainly they have competence in doing the other vision algorithms, the detection of object or the vertical integration. So whether it be a system integrator or an OEM that creates an off-the-shelf system for some sort of task, we are then a supplier of 3D cameras to those customers. So it's very similar to the 2D camera industry. There's a lot of 2D camera manufacturers, and they sell their cameras and people use them for different tasks, but the 2D manufacturer doesn't sell to the end customer. So to say, it sells via some integrator or OEM or something. Yeah. So that's similar for us.
So what are some of the challenges that your customers then, your manufacturers and integrators are facing? Is it ease of use, reliability, speed, or is it just the pick and the price?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And also it's a huge topic. But also, of course, why I think this automation is so exciting. It's so many challenges. But the thing is that it's really frustrating also, because this is easy for humans, right? To stand in front of a bin and pick objects from a bin, everyone can do it. It's really simple for us. But for a robot, this is ridiculously hard. And there's lots of reason for that, and it's about the uncertainty in all aspects. So the uncertainty in the vision system, in the gripper, in the motion planning, in the robot, and of course the complexity of creating a software brain to control all of that. So all of that together needs to work in order for such a system to be robust and can be actually scaling in the industry. So a lot of this is done in research, and there are systems out there already, but it's not, it's still in the early beginnings, I would say, in regards to human level capabilities. So it's just the sheer complexity of all parts involved. And we are focusing on one of those complexities, and that is the 3D camera itself, and the ability to get good data on all types of materials and surfaces, so that you can image all those millions of SKUs you will meet in the warehouse or in the manufacturing plant. Yeah, because the cameras out there today, also Civit included, we can't see everything, but we can see a lot, and that's what we're working on to improve all the time, and get more and more, and make those robots capable to give them this human-like vision that we set out to do.
And so by good data, you really mean good
yes,
good vision, right?
Exactly.
Good pictures.
So, yeah.
And you've said that pick and place is not solved, and that's what you mean, right? Is that this is
yeah,
very complex.
It is. I mean, just take a look at the logistics industry. And now in last year, of course, due to COVID as well, there was a huge rise in online shopping, and Amazon alone, they hired 400,000 people to do picking in the warehouses. And if this was solved, then of course it would be loads of robots doing that work, right? Clearly, it's not, because we are putting people still. So also in the logistics industry, the the automation, the intralogistics, that's come pretty far with the moving of stuff inside. You know, the shelves are there's small robots moving the shelves, or they're picking from small boxes and so on. But they move that to a human picker that takes the if you have ordered something online, the human picker picks maybe it's your cell phone and some cables. He picks that and put it in a package, pack it and send it. So that part, the industry is now going hard on automating that part. And then you would need better vision, because when all those robots are going to do the human tasks, they need to see more like us, because we have ridiculously good vision, right? So we wouldn't go around with and accept a worker that almost not seeing can't pick 60% of what you have in the bin. It's like it wouldn't work. It's just not a sustainable business. So I mean, there needs to be improvements there, and we're not there yet, but we are at a good start, and lots of things happening, and of course a lot can be already automated, but there's still a long way.
So you've got both hardware and software in your life. Yeah. When it comes to vision, is there one that's harder than the other? Like, have you solved the hardware's part and you're working on the software part?
Yeah, or how does that work? No, I think these things goes hand in hand, and when you have been in the industry for a while, you understand that it takes some time to call something solved. There's always things that can be improved. So I think in regards to hardware, some of the things that we have worked a lot on and which is very, very complex and important for high-end industrial 3D vision is these things around thermal and mechanical stability changes that happen due to, like, take a warehouse again, in nighttime, the temperature goes down, and in daytime, maybe it's different parts of the world can be up to 40 degrees in the warehouse. If it's next to an open door where in the winter time the cold air is streaming in every time a truck goes by, things like that. So then these things changes, everything changes. You can't, this is atomic forces. So the lens change, the mechanics change, everything change. And then being a high-end calibrated system and accurate system, then you need to be able to cope with these things. So that's something we have worked a lot on, and that's pure hardware. And then you can add software on top of it in order to as we do, we have so-called floating calibration, where we measure everything that happens inside, and we try to adapt based on readings from sensors inside and so on. So that is, and then of course we need to build smartness on top of the camera to understand what is noise, what is real. That's something we have worked a lot on in regards to shiny and reflective surfaces, which also is a big problem.
I watched the your YouTube, and it was very, I thought it was really good. I'll ask the listeners to check that out maybe later on after the podcast. I was going to ask you a question about the glass, the optical glass in the camera. Of course, you've got two lenses because you're recording in 3D. And how important is the glass in your camera?
Yeah, so that's interesting. We have we apply a measurement principle called structured light. So that means, in contrary to stereo vision, which maybe many know about, which is also what we have as humans. You know, the two eyes, they apply that principle. In structured light, one of the lenses is from a projector. So there's a projector behind the lens. And if you think of a projector, it's some sort of an inverse camera, where instead of receiving light, it's sending out light. So we're sending out light, and since it's structured light, it's coded So we know what we are sending out, and then we look in the camera, which has a baseline and a projective difference there. And then we can look at how that projection changes, and then we can infer the 3D information. So understandably, since we are projecting and we need a very high accuracy, it sets a lot of demands for the optics and the glass, and also in regards to what I talked about earlier about thermal and mechanical stability. We need to have ruggedized systems, and so we put a lot of effort into the design, and the devil is of course in the detail there, how to make how to make a system that can be stable, be industrial grade and usable, and live in an industrial environment for years and years. So the glass is very important, absolutely.
Can you tell the audience what you mean by true to reality?
Yeah, sure. That is it's a hard one, but I will start with. If you think of the mathematical foundation, so to say, we have a term called accuracy, and I think it's something that is confused a lot when you hear people talk about it. But accuracy has two components, and that is one component, which is precision, and one that is trueness. And precision is about the noise, or if you take a surface and you image a surface, there will be some random noise on the surface, like not every pixel is perfectly placed where it should be. It's a little over the surface, a little under, you know, there's noise there. That is the noise you kind of, when people talk about noise, they talk about like this, it's like this blurriness or graininess of an image. So in 3D, that's kind of like the precision or how, when you take a lot of images, how close to each other are each the points. And then you have trueness. And trueness is about, are you representing the reality correct? So that means sizes. Are the sizes exactly what they are in real life? Are the rotation correct? Is the absolute distance? Because you measure always in 3D, you measure from an origin, and that's inside the 3D camera. And then what is the correct absolute distance to the object that you are looking at? So all of that is inside the trueness. So if you have good trueness, you have it's very true to reality. And then of course the combination of the trueness and precision together gives you accuracy. So then that is low noise and high trueness. So this is very important to understand when to use a camera in what sort of applications. And a good example is the first Kinect that came out. It had it wasn't so good, the quality of that data, but what this was made for, it worked quite okay for, and that was gesture recognition in front of your TV. And in that particular case, what you want to do is you want to recognize a gesture, and it doesn't matter how much, if your hand is at 1.1 meter from the camera or 1.2 meter, it's not so important. It's more important that you see what you do. So and then that is the precision, that you can actually distinguish the fingers but you're not placing them right in space. But immediately when you introduce a robot and you want to use the data to interact with the objects, of course, trueness is very, very important. Because if you see an object and it's placed a little wrongly, maybe it's a little to the side and a little bigger or rotated than in reality, then you can crash when you try to grip it. And that is a huge problem, actually. So true to reality means that it's correct in regards to all of these factors.
That's great. Thank you for that clarity on that. I see from some of the videos that I researched in preparation for the podcast, I see the Zivid mounted on a robot arm. Is that kind of the natural state? Is that preferred, or are you just seeing a lot more of that application?
Yeah, that's something. It's used sometimes, but mostly the industry has been mounting camera stationary because it's kind of a little more straightforward to do that. The thing with on-arm is that it gives a lot of appealing benefits if you can do it. So one thing is that you can get closer, and a lot of the problems with 3D in particular is you want high resolution, you want high quality images, and you want it over the working range you are working at. And if you have a long working range, then the degradation is pretty quickly going worse based on distance. So if you have it on arm, you can always have the same distance, so to say, because whether you do a depalletization task, you take the image at the same height, even if you have taken the first layer of boxes, you go a little closer, take the next image and so on. So you get closer, then you don't so annoyed by the ambient light, and you can minimize the occlusion, the shadowing, because you can see from different sides. And it's also very economic that you can use, instead of having one camera at the peak and the place position, you can use the on-arm camera to do everything. So why aren't the industry using it more? Because it's also complex. So that's something we have worked a lot on, and now we released our CV2 camera. We have reduced the size significantly. So it's more easily mountable. It doesn't restrict the motions of the robot so much. It's also mechanically stable, things like that, which is important when you have maybe vibrations or things happen when you accelerate and so on the robot. So I think it's if it was more available, the industry would use it more, and that's what we are trying to do. Because it has so many benefits, and just think of the mobile manipulators that are coming more and more. Having the flexibility when you have an on-arm camera to like picking from shelves, you couldn't mount a stationary camera on all the shelves, right? So you need to have some on the robot moving around, and then the flexibility of looking at different shelves and so on. So I think it's something that we will see more and more of. And we at CVID, we believe so much in it that we have positioned us to deliver those kind of systems to the industry.
So that's one of your focuses on the autonomous robot industry as well.
Yes, I. So that it's about the flexibility and the what you can do with it, and all these factories of the future, where everything changes, is dynamic, and so on. Then the stationary setups is they have their beauties, but they are not as flexible.
Well, I think the future is mobile. That's for sure. What are some of the challenges that still remain in the industry?
So there's still, like we talked about, of course, this thing about 3D quality on all types of materials and surfaces. That's a biggie in general. There are objects that are not possible to image as of today, especially transparent. That's kind of like this holy grail thing to do. But still, something we have worked a lot on is shiny and reflective. We have come pretty far on that, but there's still challenges. And then, of course, in general, this thing about that you want a big working area, a distance, and you want high resolution and great image quality, and typically a bigger field of view makes it harder to achieve all of this. You want like super great quality, and you want it in a smaller and better package. And then if you put on arm on top of that, you know, then that's some of the challenges.
So those are kind of those things that we've all been dealing with. Everybody wants it smaller or bigger.
Yeah, it's like better, smaller, bigger, faster, better. And you kind of hitting your head into some of the physical challenges, limitations, and so there's a lot of innovation going on and ways to get around it, but it's gradually improving. What we see going forward is more on arm, more better quality of the vision as an important factor. And also, one thing I've seen, though, is also this thing about we see an influx of more high-end industrial grade vision system and AI combined, because there is a lot of AI going on, and I think that will be the future. It's still early for that in regards to picking and placing, but if you take ourselves, we have great vision in combination with our brain. So I think we need to offer the robots the same. You know, we need to give them great vision as well. So I think that's something that will be important for them to be able to do this universal picking we want them to do.
Henrik, thanks for coming on the podcast. If someone's interested in getting in touch with you or learning more about Zivid, how should they do that?
So the easiest would be to just contact us on zivid.com. We have like a contact page then and so on. And of course, if you want to get hold of me, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so you can contact me there.
Great. Well, thank you. Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey automation solutions for their worldwide clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. And their info at earhartautomation.com. And Earhart is spelled E-H-R-H-A-R-D-T. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, the AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. And these four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd like to thank and recognize our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And they're at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the Robot Industry Podcast, just reach out to me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Traction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew, Chris Gray, for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner, Janet, and our partners, A3 Painted Robot, and our sponsor, Earhart Automation Systems.